Welcome to the Tech Pro Unicorn Podcast, brought to you by RPI Consultants, a podcast about the magic of digital transformation through technology. Each week, we'll cover topics related to ERP, RPA, business transformation, leadership, healthcare, and unicorns.
And welcome back to another episode of Tech Pro Unicorn Podcast. I am your host, Michael Grace, and today I am joined by Jeff Cohen, and we are going to talk about a little bit of a play on words around accountability and being accountable, and we'll get into all of that. Jeff is a gentleman with over 20 years experience as an entrepreneur, a management consultant, and a business coach. Jeff is highly effective around business turnaround strategy. He helps companies create enormous business value, operate effectively, and prepare sometimes for an exit of their company. He's an expert team builder, aligns people and skills for high growth and performance. He is a much sought after public speaker. He has experience facing off with the sharks on ABC Shark Tank, which I absolutely want to talk about. And he has an upcoming book coming out, we think around June, called Count on a Bull. There's the play on words, a practical guide to lift, shift, and empower you and your team. All the stuff that we're going to be talking about for Jeff is available out on a website called www.countonable.com. So countonable.com, spelled just like it sounds. Link will be down below. Jeff, thank you for taking the time and joining the podcast.
Michael, thanks so much for having me. It's been such a great pleasure getting to know you today.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit, maybe more about who Jeff is and how'd you get to this point where you've studied being accountable and then kind of changed it up a little bit to really lay down on countonable.
So when I was 8 years old, I wrote all of the professional sports teams and I asked them to send me stickers. And I got a stack of stickers. It was just enormous, right? Like, you know, just like you've got those tiles on your wall. I said to my mom, hey, can I put all these on my wall? It was the fastest no I can recall getting. So I decided to put them on my notebook. And I had a whole bunch that were left over until my friends started saying, hey, Jeff, are you selling those? And at 8 years old, I decided, yes, I'm enterprising. I'll make money. Sure, I'm selling them.
That's awesome.
And I made $50. And my dad said, Jeff, you're an entrepreneur. And I said, that's awesome. What is that?
Yeah.
And I've been living it ever since. And in my adult life, I've started 6 companies. I grew a technology company to 50 people in about 2 years. We did business with over 100 Fortune 500 and Global 2000 companies. And our business at that time was agile software development. Back in the early 2000s, my partner, Mac, had written a book on the topic. And what I found was it was highly effective at helping companies to deliver software. And as I've gone through everything I have in my life, and I've been through the ups and downs of success and failure, by the way, you'll find I talk a lot about things I've failed at. I'm really successful at failing. And I want everybody to know that the number one thing that you will take away from anybody you ever listen to is not their successes, but what they learned from their failures that generated a success. So I spend a lot of time sharing my failures. I'm very open about it. Many of them in my life I've been very embarrassed about. And I've learned how it's okay. It's just okay. Mm-hmm. So your question about, well, how do you get to countonable from that, right? I'm just curious, Michael, have you ever heard anybody use the word accountable and really just love it?
No. Nobody wants to be accountable.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I heard it was last night on the news. They were talking about some people that needed to be held accountable because they were shooting people. Then there was another story about a politician needing to be held accountable.
Yeah.
But those are the general references the world has about being accountable. So imagine being told by your boss, hey, you're accountable for something. It's not generally a warm and fuzzy feeling, is it?
No.
Yeah. So I took a program in 2013 to 2015 called the Team Management and Leadership Program. And I got very, very comfortable taking accountability on. It took 2 years for that to happen. And it was highly focused on accountability. How many people do you know are willing to invest 2 years in learning to embrace accountability? Very few people, right. So what I did with that was I took all the experience I had and I formed my company, C-Level Roundtable, and I immediately got about 50 CEOs, business owners, and entrepreneurs together in groups of six or eight with the objective of identifying where the gaps in their businesses were. And what we found was that people were ineffective communicators. And the number one thing that the CEOs wanted was they just wanted to know that if they assigned somebody something, that it was going to get done. That was number one. And they were at a loss for how that could happen. Can you imagine? I grew a company to 50 people, right? I was a shitty boss. By the way, I figured that out in this program. I was a lousy boss. Anybody that I managed, they loved my ability to create a vision and a strategy. But when it came to actually getting stuff done, there were other people in the company really good at that. Me, I would get frustrated. I would get angry. I would get resigned. That was my number one go-to. I would just get resigned and let it fall apart. Let it go away. And it was really, it was tragic that that occurred. Mm-hmm. And we had so much success anyway. Like, I can just imagine what would have happened had I had the tools I've developed today. By the way, right. That's a failure that's become a success. It only took 20 years. and hundreds of people that I've worked with to figure it out. But accountability sucks. People hate it. Mm-hmm. Stop being accountable. Be countable. Accountability requires someone to say you're accountable and someone to actually be accountable. But being countable only requires one person. So, Michael, you can count on me when I work with you to ensure that I don't purposely trigger you, because that will have you go away in never land. That we come up with opportunities and ideas and strategies to implement. But what you can't count on me for, which is more important than any of that, is I'm not going to be the guy making 50 cold calls a day to help you implement a strategy. That's not me. Mm-hmm. That's way more valuable to know than what I will do.
I love it. I mean, so many people, we just wrote a job description, right, for an entry-level position. And we're like, what does this person do? And accountability came up, right? And they were like, oh, this person's accountable for this, that, and the other. And I was like, it was so weird because before we started the podcast, right, that word just leaves a bad taste in your mouth, right? Like, and I was like, you know, can we use other words? Can we use assist, participate, like something else, right? And you're really looking for like these self-starters, right, that are excited and eager and they jump at things and versus like, here's your task list. You're accountable to get this task list done every day. That sounds like a job no one would want, right? But like empowering them in some other way is really cool. Before the podcast started, Jeff and I just had this really great discussion as we were getting to know each other. And I told him, I said, I'm so excited about this. Because when you think about business, right, there's just this, everybody's like, we got to bring people back to the office so that they're accountable so that we can see them. And I'm like, just because they're sitting in a cube doesn't make them any more effective. Like, it's so crazy.
It probably does just the opposite. Because now they've spent an hour driving to work, an hour driving home, right? And they've gotten used to working in their home office the last 2 years. But I want to touch on something you just mentioned a minute ago about hiring people. Mm-hmm. And creating a job description and being accountable. So, Michael, when you interview someone for a job, like you're looking for certain things, right? Mm-hmm. And you get to a point in the interview process where you say, I think this is the one. People do that. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing happens. You're like, well, if they can do all of this stuff great, I wonder if they can also do this. So out of left field, you say, hey, by the way, can you also do this? Now they want the job. They need the job. There's something, right?
Right. Yep.
So what's the likely answer going to be?
Of course I can do that.
Right. Now they're accountable for that. They just signed up for that, right? That's what's going through your head. Going through their head is, I'll figure it out when I get there. Mm-hmm. Right?
Very true.
And what's missing now is their verify meeting. So you know on a regular basis, things are being accomplished. You talked about with me, trust. I work for a company that just trusts me. It's awesome. I think that's amazing. There are three frameworks in my book you'll learn. The first one is the trust framework. Right? The trust framework says that you've got to have some shared values. You need to know what the ability of resources is. And communication has to be effective. The second framework is the alignment framework. And that is basically the leader sharing their vision, figuring out what the priority of actions is, and that effective communication shows up again. And then there's the trust alignment framework. When you bring those two things together, mm-hmm. It has all of that. But there's something that you now get to consider. And that is the outcome you want. Most people are ineffective communicators. So they communicate from their heart or their spirit or their emotion. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's not really very effective when you as the boss pick up the phone and say, hey, Michael, did you finish the project yet? Where is it? When is it going to be done? I really need it. That will trigger people. The very first chapter in my book is all about that. It's called Grand Theft Auto. It's about when I stole a car. And you want to read that chapter. You can go to my website, countaudible.com, and just put your name on my mailing list, and I'll send you the first chapter like right away. And it's a fun chapter because I was 5 years old. But I got the trigger. And every time someone says to me, Jeff, why are you doing that? It almost doesn't matter what their tone of voice is. I pull out my shield, I take my sword out, and I protect and defend myself like there's no tomorrow. And I will waste 20 to 30 minutes of your time on that topic. And then when I leave the subject, I will be thinking about it for the next 3 days. Mm-hmm. And it will take me out and reduce my productivity. However, when you talk to me and you think about the outcome that you want, you might catch yourself before you set me off. I have a client. It's two business partners, and they have a few employees. And one of them is a really great sales guy. He's a driver. You know, he's their CEO. Mm-hmm. He's an amazing guy. Love these guys. The other guy is more marketing and administrative and, you know, partner relationships, your sales engineer type, right? And when I first started working with them 4 years ago, the one that was the driver was always setting the other guy off. And then I would get a phone call. Hey, Jeff, I can't find him. He's not doing anything. He's out of communication. And I, you know, took a while. Eventually, I introduced the topic of outcomes, right? Because people, when they're emotional in that state, you can't introduce anything new. You've got to talk them down. But then they get to where they can listen and they're open. And that's the one thing about my coaching when I work with people is I'm looking for where is it in the outcome they want to go, helping them understand there's an outcome. And then about 2 years ago, I get a phone call from the partner. He said to me, Jeff, you're not going to believe this. I'm like, what? Well, Rob caught himself. I said, caught himself doing what? Before he started yelling at me, he stopped. Then a little while later that day, I got another call. Jeff, you're not going to believe this. I caught myself. I said, what'd you catch yourself? He said, well, the outcome that I wanted was for Tom to do something. And I was about to jump on him about it, but I stopped.
Yeah.
And what happens is it does take a while for people to take new habits on. But I have it that when you're in a structured program and you're open to being coached, you can have these breakthroughs.
I love it. The book, which Jeff was generous enough to share an electronic copy of, and as I skimmed through it, that first chapter just made me laugh, you know, because I was like, Grand Theft Auto. I was like, is he talking about the video game? Did he really steal a car? This could get really interesting. And I won't ruin it, right? But it is a cool chapter that just has a great story to it that really brings you around to see the point in a very fun way. And there's so many cool kind of chapters to it, and they're all like, can sometimes you read a book and you're like, oh, I'm starting this chapter. And then you naturally, when you start a book, you skim forward and you're like, how many pages is this chapter? And some of them, you know, are like, here's an 80 page chapter. And you're like, oh my God, right? Like, how am I going to, you know, these chapters are all, you know, very, very consumable. The book, I won't say it's a quick read, but it moves through these really, 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 really quickly. Just making great point after point and kind of builds on itself. So if folks are interested, right, when we say, how do you change accountability to being count onable? How do you do that, right? How do you make that shift if you're managing a team and you want to be like, okay, I get it. Triggers accountability bad. How do I change this paradigm?
Well, that's a great question. And you're right. There are a lot of pieces of that puzzle, which is why it's taken me 20 years and hundreds of clients to develop. The real process needs to start with where you as a leader want to be. Mm-hmm. And ends with where your people know that they can count on you and what they can count on you for. Because until you can be open and vulnerable enough to tell your people what you are not countable for, they'll never tell you. And let me tell you something. The number one thing about accountability is it's critical for success. And there's only one person in a company that's truly accountable. It's the person that started it. The one that's writing paychecks for 50 or 100 or 200 families, right? They're accountable. If things go awry and they lay people off, that impacts lives and families, and it sucks. I know, I've been there. However, what I developed was a program that in 90 days gets you to where you start good habits and where things are not disjointed, but they flow. Where you as a leader now are taking your leaders up a level. And instead of being the most important person in your company, someone else is. Mm-hmm. All of your department heads are more important than you. And then they learn that, and then they learn, oh, they can make their people more important than them. See, it's the concept of the servant leadership never goes away. It just gets redefined. In this case, what happens is you say, I want to be a company that does something, whatever the something is. I want to be this big. But you set these great big goals and then you kind of forget about them when the goal was 1 million and you did 100. You don't want to be embarrassed by the goal not being met.
Right.
But you're not doing the critical thinking about how to get to a goal. And you're also not always doing the critical thinking about how to lift your people up. But I will tell you this. When you go on a vacation and you work 2 to 4 hours a day because you're the most important person in the company and you have a desire to sell your business someday, you're going to have handcuffs to that business for 5 years because your buyer is not going to believe that they can just take it over and run it.
Right.
So the Next Level 90 program is a business accelerator program that I've run and developed that takes a company from being accountable to where people can stand up and say, I'm countable. I have integrity. You can count on me. I have integrity, right? I will inspire people. You can count on me for that. I will innovate. You can count on me for that. It's just most companies don't know how to get there, and they implement programs that are very point programs instead of really looking at what is the foundation of my business built on? Mm-hmm. Is it built on a point program, or is it built on the notion that I want to teach my people to be leaders, and I want them to teach their people to be leaders? And the way that happens is by demonstrating leadership and giving it to them.
I love it. I mean, we're talking about something on the podcast, right? I've mentioned this other book so many times, and I just believe in it so much, and it's reflected even here in your book, The Speed of Trust, right? And it's trust and communication. If I had to say, you know, what are two things that have to be in really successful cultures and such, it has to be the two-way trust, right? Leaders have to trust their teams, and their teams have to trust their leaders. And that's not an easy jump. Most people come into companies, distrustful, right? They've worked for horrible companies. They've just been a cog in the wheel or a number. And that trust has to be won, right? Just like in any relationship, whether it be with your spouse or your friends or wherever you are, right? You have to earn that trust. So you as a leader just sitting at the top don't get to say, well, I'm the leader, you just trust me. That kind of doesn't work. You have to work at it every day. And the easiest way for leaders is with transparent communication, right? And so many companies, I just see them with communication departments, and we have to communicate in this clouded, ambiguous way so that we don't rile our employees. And the employees are like, what the hell is this BS, right? Like, they just want honest, open, two-way communication. And if that leader sets the vision and communicates it and says, hey guys, here's where we're trying to go, right? People will jump on board. It seems just so simple, but so many companies just can't get it right or don't want to, or leaders. And I always say leadership is a science, right? I have all kinds of degrees in management and in science. It's a science, and we promote people to leadership positions because they've been there a long time. Ain't wrong. Or, you know, it's crazy, but,
you know, I hear in what you're talking about, like how to trust, how to lead. There are a couple of really key things I'll point out. So first off, the book Count Donable, when I say it's a practical guide, it's actually the step-by-step, how do you become Count Donable? So I just want to let you know, the Count Donable process is a patent-pending method and process that I've published in this book. And you can do it on your own. Now, it's a coaching program. So if you don't have a coaching culture, then you probably want to engage with a coach. But Michael, the number one thing you just said that affects everybody at their very base core is getting to trust. And it's not always understood by people what it means to be transparent, right? Because as a CEO, listen, there are certain things you just can't tell people. I mean, like, you're not going to disclose everyone's salary to everybody. That's not going to be out there, right? However, if you cannot be vulnerable and tell one on yourself, people won't trust you. The speed of trust happens the more you tell on yourself.
Yep.
The more you set your culture up that people can tell on themselves, the easier and quicker it will be to build that list of traits employees have. Because you talk about hiring employees also. And here's the thing. When you hire somebody, right, you don't always know what their strengths are. You don't always know what they're good at, and you don't know what they like doing. There's a premise that a lot of folks have today that they should hire A employees. I think A employees are great. My premise is you probably have an A employee in your company for every job you need done, and they may be in B and C jobs. Like, when's the last time you actually reevaluated people's strengths, weaknesses, desires, skills, capabilities, and figured out, oh, well, Jeff is great at this and lousy at that. Why do I keep giving him that? So in my book, I actually give you a process and a simple meeting structure and the words to not trigger people. The words to say, instead of, why isn't it done yet? Or where is it? Like, what are some things that you can actually say that don't put people on their heels?
Right.
That give them the ability to step forward with confidence and power. You know, till I took the StrengthsFinder test by Gallup, I didn't know what my strengths were. I mean, I kind of knew, right? But then I saw futuristic, strategic, communication, like, oh, geez, no wonder when I talk to people, I'm always looking at what's possible and how to get there.
Right.
Then I looked at the bottom of the list, number 34, adaptability. No wonder once I have things set, I don't want to change it. I really resist being adaptable. But if you don't know that about me,
yeah,
you can't respond. So part of what we're doing is we're building a database with you of what your people are not just capable of, but what they are attracted to doing. And if they say they're going to get a task done in a week and they don't, and it's a priority action that maps to the CEO's desired outcome, maybe we're giving the wrong thing to the wrong person. And most companies, instead of that, they create this penalty for that person that makes them feel bad, instead of acknowledging they're just in the wrong role or they're doing the wrong thing. But they know your culture, people like them, they fit in, you know, they're not doing wrong things. They've just, they started out as a salesperson and now they want to be a sales manager. So they're bored at their sales job, but you haven't noticed that. You just noticed that they're not performing today.
I love it. So, you know, you bring up something that I have so much to that I want to kind of say after that. One, when he says it's kind of an executable plan, chapter 24 in the book says, create your next level 90 game plan, right? Like the book walks you through literally how to do this, which is really cool. After, you know, I mean, again, we're in chapter 24, right? So you've learned a bunch of basic concepts to that point, and now you get to kind of build your own plan, and then you have something to execute on. And there's things like 30-day milestones, 60-day milestones, 90-day milestones, which is really cool. I hate a book that like talks conceptually and then leaves you with, what the hell do I do with that, right? Like, and you're like, okay, I'm a better person because now I understand it, but I have no practical way to actually change the world, right? Like, I know I need to change the world. I just don't know how the hell to do it. So this is contrarian to that, in that he actually lays out and helps you with some plans. So you also said something that I thought was really cool, and I just want to share with the listeners what we did. We had that. We had like this people got into roles and we were like, man, like, why isn't this person really cool at all this data analysis? You know? So we did a tool called Real Colors. They're based out of Phoenix. You can just realcolors.org. And it categorized people's kind of wants, needs, strengths, personalities into four colors, right? For versus some of these personality profiles, they're like, you're an AIEOFZ2. You're like, what the hell does that even mean? You know, you're either green, gold, orange, or blue, and it has very unique meanings. And then we as a company were like, oh, we have this dude doing a data job, and he's really a people person. So that's probably not a great fit, right? And we're starting to move people around based on their analysis, and they're much happier because they're doing stuff that they're good at, and they're achieving, and they're accountable, or they're countable for. I'm going to start doing that, and everyone in my company is going to be like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And I'm like,
"Read the book,
June. You got to read Jeff's book."
Well, Michael, just to your point, a couple of things. I don't want to cut you off, but I just want to add something.
This is great.
So, first off, chapter 24. I just want everyone to know there's like 60 chapters, and each chapter is about 4 pages long. So, it's written for those of us with ADD. And I want to thank Kellen Flukinger, who was my book writing coach and wrote the book on how you write a book, because he, without him, couldn't have been done. But then also, you also mentioned one other thing, 30, 60, and 90-day milestones. So I want you to just understand, you have it backwards. It's 90, 60, and 30.
Yes, I did.
And in the book, you'll read the chapter about walking up the staircase, or better yet, taking the window washer's elevator up to the top. It's, you start at the top and you work your way backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can actually start doing critical thinking and making business decisions based on, do I have enough resources? Is there enough time? Are my people skilled in this area? Like, yeah, you get to make those decisions. So I just wanted to acknowledge, like, everything that you've said is spot on. And I love that your company is taking that on. That is so missing in most places. The career enhancement people look for at different stages of their life.
Yeah.
It's why people leave companies. Why should they leave a company they like because the job they want isn't there?
I do a lot of consulting in healthcare for some of the world's largest healthcare companies. I have the privilege of serving them. And when we get to like turnover, there's all healthcare just needs to get blown up in every aspect. But when we talk about retention, especially, you hire somebody, you invest in them, you bring on, let's just use a nurse because my wife's a nurse. And then they're like, oh, maybe they're an ICU nurse. And you're like, yes, finally, I filled this ICU nurse position. They're a great employee. They're doing great. And they're like, ooh, I really think I want to go to oncology, or maybe they want to go to maternity or whatever. And we're like, no, you have to stay in this position. And they're like, but I don't want to. I want to, you know. And then we say, nope, you have to be here for 6 months in this position before you can apply to any other position. And there's all these rules and oppression. And so this great person, you know what they do? They go, screw you. I can go make a dollar more at the competitor who's like in Houston, is literally right next door. And I can go be an oncology nurse or a maternity nurse. And we let the talent walk out the door instead of instilling cultures that allow them to move to maybe what their interest is, where they'll even be an even better performer, if that's possible, than these great performers that they previously were.
Well, what do you call it, Michael, when you have an employee that is great at what they do, is strong at it, and loves doing it? What do you call that? And what would they call it?
Nirvana.
That'd be their dream job, right?
Right.
And from an employer standpoint, the dream employee. And why would that be? Very simple. Because when you have the job that you're good at, that you love doing, and it capitalizes on your strengths, why would you leave? But instead, you see this mantra about go hiring A players, right? Let's go hire some A players. Well, what if you already have the A player, but they're just in a B job? Like, what if you were focused a little more on aiming your people to the right role instead of releasing them? By the way, which reduces trust and eliminates the ability to be aligned. So trust will always be compromised. You will never see a day when there's not someone looking for the chink in the armor. I trust you implicitly, but I'm always looking for where I can't trust you. And by the way, trust is a very generically used term. What on earth do you trust people for? What is it? Instead of, oh, I trust you. But what do you trust me for? Do you trust that I have your back? Do you trust that I'm looking out for your interests? Do you trust that I'm committed to our relationship? I don't know. So really great points. Thank you for bringing that out of me.
That's awesome. A great example from, again, some consulting in healthcare, we had the ability to, we had attached RFID to, and some other technology to badges that nurses, wear to identify themselves, but also nurses, just the environment of a nurse, right? We need nurses to be able to have a way to declare distress, right? If they're attacked by a patient, I know that sounds horrific, but believe me, it happens way more than anybody would ever care to know. So we need a way for them to essentially hit a panic button. The best place to put that is on their badge. But because of that, right, we need to know where they are. So because we have that technology in a lot of hospitals on nurses, there's a way that we can automate them clocking in, right? Like we can use a technology called radio frequency identification or RFID, and we know when they're on their unit, right? So we were like, hey, instead of having them go to this time clock and act like a McDonald's employee and having to badge in and badge out, why don't we just empower the technology? And when they're on their unit and they're in patient rooms and stuff, we know that they're working and we can just automatically clock them in. And the resistance to that, this lack of trust, they're like, oh, we can't do that because, people will use that. Like they'll give their badge to somebody else who'll walk up to the unit and they'll get clocked in and they'll be down in the cafeteria. And I was like, I can't even, right? Like you have a management problem. Like this isn't a technology issue now. Now you have like this management problem. You have a trust issue, right? Like it's just kind of crazy how important trust is. Because if you can get that, if you can get that trust alignment, you can empower so many cool things within your organization. It just like, once you do all the work to get that trust alignment, I just feel like you're now empowered to just, go into the future.
Yeah. It's a great comment you're making there. People certainly have issues like Big Brother is watching and that's not okay. And it really does come down to what kind of trust do you want to have, mm-hmm. right? If I've hired you to do a job, then I'm trusting that you understand what the job requirement is, but how do I know for sure that you actually do? And then, okay, beyond that, how do I know you're where you said you're going to be when you said you're going to be there? And why is that important? Well, in a hospital environment with nurses, patient care is number one, or it should be, right? I was listening to a podcast the other day. The guy was talking about hiring virtual assistants overseas and how they have software that captures keystrokes and work activities so that they know that you're doing the job. When you sign up for something, it's a lot easier to align with the way things are going to go. Like I said, I'm not very adaptable. So if I was in one of those jobs and then today you said, oh, hey, I want you to carry this badge. It tracks you wherever you go. Yeah, I might have some heartburn over that. It would take me a while to come around. But the bottom line is that that's an example where people will say, see, they don't trust me. And see, trust is broken. And they're always going to look for that. And there are strategies that you can implement. And by the way, in Next Level 90, the meeting schedule, which by the way, I publish in the book, is an example of how you can limit the lack of trust, how you can improve the likelihood of alignment. Because really, it's just all about people and relationships. Mm-hmm. Nothing more. People and relationships.
What do you do if you just have somebody who's just not accountable, right? Like, how do you deal with that? If somebody is just not count-onable, like, man, they just keep missing dates and I'm really working with them. I'm clearly communicating and they're just, doing who the heck knows what.
Well, so first off, every HR organization has a process that they want you to go through if someone is not doing their job. By the way, the likelihood that you will, after being put on probation, that you will get through that is very small, right? I mean, the reality is once you've gotten to the point where you're put on probation, you're looking for another job. They know you're looking for another job. The milestones that get set up while you're on probation usually are not milestones that are you're looking at saying, I'm going to achieve. And even if they are, the water's been poisoned already, right?
Yeah.
So what you want to do is you want to identify stuff like that as early in the process as possible. It starts with hiring, but if you start Next Level 90 and you already have a team, which companies usually do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you start putting in place the trust and verify meetings, then you've set people up so that they know what to expect. I know that every week I'm having a meeting with our boss. We're going to look at the priority actions and see which ones were due this week, which ones are due next week, and where I'm at in those. It's a very non-threatening process, especially when the question gets asked like, hey, where are you in the process of this action? Instead of, is it done yet? Right? When you're able to be open-ended like that, now you can get people to say, look, I'm finding it's just not something I'm good at, or I'm not drawn to it. Instead of the answer, which is, here's 20 minutes of reasons why I didn't do it. And as a manager, by the way, you have 5 or 6 direct reports. You're going to waste 2 hours a week listening to those 20-minute to 30-minute reasons. When all you really want to know is it going to be done? Are they the right person to do it? So if they're not the right person to do it, take it away from them.
Yeah.
Say, hey, look, I don't think this is something that fits in your strengths. It's not really your priority. It's the CEO's priority. And look, I know you don't want to look bad by not doing it, but I want to remove the penalty here. There's no penalty. Let me find the things to give you that you're great at to prop you up and help you look good. This one's not going to help you look good. Let me give it to Joe or Jane. They're likely to jump on this. It's something they like doing, I think. That's where the database starts getting built about who you give what to. And by the way, what if it's someone in another department?
I love it. Yeah, you're empowering your company to almost team on the end result.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'll leave you with this. When your CEO says, I want to grow sales 20%, and now they've got this plan of their own, which will have a 90-day window, 60 and 30, right?
Yeah.
And so this is where we would be in 90 days. Well, guess what? They have to effectively communicate that to their managers that report to them. And then those people have to create a plan for their department. And those plans need to sync up with the other departments. Because if I'm the CRO and I'm going to grow sales 20%, I might need more training. I might need new people, additional people, right? I might need a lot of things. Well, who's going to be involved in that? HR will. Finance will. Heck, I might want a new marketing approach. Now marketing will. Right? If you don't align all the teams, then what you really have is you've got 5 team leaders all driving sports cars on different freeways going different places. Get them all on the same bus. It doesn't go as fast, but it gets there.
I love it. Yeah. You just covered chapter 36, right? Which is, chapter 36, save 2 hours per week, right? I think any leader would love to save 2 hours per week, but more importantly, like have a more meaningful discussion with your team, right? Like I use the term, how can I help, right? And it's just so simple, and they'll be like, oh no, I got it. Or, hey, could you talk to so-and-so because I've emailed them 3 times and I can't get this that's critical to me being successful. Great, sure. You know, and I email and because of, you know, a title, they're like, oh shit. And then they get it done, right? It's such a cool book. I love that literally, I hadn't noticed really that literally every chapter is like 2 to 4 pages. And that's just because at first I was like, how many chapters are in this book? it's going to be like, you know, the manifesto, it's going to be like 5,000 pages long.
You know, I wrote the book first off when my wife, who hasn't read the book yet, by the way, she's not a reader. She's an actress. Right? She coaches people in acting, but she doesn't read books. She reads plays.
When I
wrote the book, I got my first draft done in 7 weeks. She's like, are you sacrificing quality for speed? And the answer to that is no. And the reason for that is these are all stories that came out of my brain, and I didn't create this long, elaborate thing to tie them all together. They're just, these things have occurred in my life. And when people read the book, they will see why on Shark Tank, I was the first person ever called radioactive, right? By Kevin O'Leary. And, you know, how I recovered from that. And Robert Herjavec stood up for me and got in a big fight with Kevin O'Leary for like 10 minutes over this. It was great. But the stuff that comes out of the book is me. It's raw. It's unfiltered. I don't try and look good. If anything, I do my very best to show you the worst parts of me. I just posted a video where I was walking with my foster daughter, and I said, there's a reason I focus on my failures so much. Because from that, if I don't learn something, you won't. If I haven't learned something that will help you avoid something I did not succeed at, then who am I serving? So I focus a lot on the failures, but I also focus a lot on successes. And I have an invitation for people.
Awesome.
Special invitation. So my book is launching June 14th. Between now and then, if you have an interest in playing a game with me, because everything I do has to be fun. If it's not fun, why do it?
Right.
Another chapter in the book. But for me, this is fun. So I have today 27 pre-reviews of my book. I'm aiming for 100 by June 14th, where people will be able to go to Amazon and post it. If you have an interest in doing that, go to my website, countaudible.com, request the first chapter. When I email it to you, you can write me back with your interest in pre-reviewing the book. I'll send you the whole book to review. I promise you'll love it. It's about a 5-hour read if you go cover to cover, or 5 minutes chapter by chapter.
Awesome. That is cool. I don't think we've had an invitation to pre-review a book ever on the podcast, which is very, very cool. So Jeff, thank you so much. We've covered the importance of the trust alignment. We've had some fun talking about accountability to being countable. We've shared some really cool examples. We've called out a couple of key chapters in the book, which again, the book is just, it's just fun. If you were to be looking, I'm looking at another monitor over here. If you were to be looking at some of the chapter titles and such, it's just consumable. It's fun. It's interesting. Thank you, one, for writing the book and helping build better cultures and better, you know, company environments for folks to work in and to thrive in and for everyone to be successful in both companies with great employees and employees working for great leaders and great companies where they can be successful as well. It has been a blast having you on the podcast.
Hey, Michael, it's been my pleasure. And I just will say in closing, Stop being accountable. Be countable.
I love it.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Tech Pro Unicorn Podcast. Make sure to visit our website at www.techprounicorn.com, where you can subscribe to the show and catch our latest blog articles. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Remember, unicorns represent the magic of digital transformation that occurs when business process is enabled with technology.